KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Today, we're airing part two of my interview with filmmaker Josh Tucker about the proposed pebble mine in Southwest Alaska in his documentary, We Can't Eat Gold. I'm Emily Gresham Beamer for KBOO News. Today, I'm speaking with filmmaker Josh Tucker about the realities of the proposed pebble mine and the fierce community resistance that has followed the proposal. Josh directed the 2013 documentary, We Can't Eat Gold, which chronicles the resistance of Alaska's native communities to the pebble mine. Could you speak a little bit more about how the Trump administration's appointments in the EPA created an environment in which this mine was able to move forward?
Right. So where we picked up the federal permitting process story before was 2014, where the EPA issued their proposed determination under 404C, blocking the mine from entering the permitting process. So the Pebble Limited Partnership sued, and that lawsuit was unresolved until Donald Trump's first EPA administrator, Scott Pruitt, took office. Scott Pruitt, in May, so shortly after actually taking office, went ahead and met with Tom Collier in a meeting that was arranged by lobbyists and resolved the lawsuit and said he was completely blocking or withdrawing the proposed determination under 404C. The mine then entered the permitting process, so he let them into the permitting process. And that's when the Army Corps of Engineers process began. Now, this is at the same time that the Army Corps of Engineers was very quickly conducting the permitting process for the Dakota Access Pipeline. And so many folks who have followed the struggle in Standing Rock saw how quickly the Trump administration managed to get permits for that. And so what we're seeing with the Army Corps process for the proposed pebble mine is very analogous. Because if you look at their previous processes, like the Rosemont mine, that took 8 years to do their environmental impact statement, right? Or the Donlin mine in Alaska. These are other hard rock open pit mines. So Donlin took 6 years. Now the Army Corps, with this same speed that they had with Standing Rock, is looking to complete the environmental impact statement process in under 2 years for the proposed pebble mine. So we can see that not only did Administrator Pruitt jump on it as soon as he got in office, but then, just like they did with Standing Rock, the permitting process, got drastically accelerated. So then there was some pushback and there was some national press coverage, and put out a sort of confusing statement saying, in echoing some opponents of the mine's own language, saying, oh, well, you know, I'm going to go ahead and not withdraw the proposed determination. But then, right before, like a week before he actually had to resign, a memo to the Office of Management and Budget, which is part of the executive branch that controls proposed regulatory changes. And so this memo that is sort of Administrator Pruitt's final word on the proposed pebble mine was a memo to draft regulation to remove 404C authority under the Clean Water Act entirely. So not only would it retroactively invalidate this 2 years of science by dozens of people producing a 100-page study that is the Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment, it would say that the EPA could not do that in the future for any other major project. And now the new EPA administrator has had to recuse himself from Pebble entirely because it was his law firm that set up the meeting between Collier and Pruitt when the Trump administration first took office. So we can see that it's a tangled web, and the Trump administration is, I believe, objectively conducting a madcap dash to ram permits through for what the Obama administration was quite clear about was an incredibly dangerous idea.
So the permitting process, is it completely controlled by federal agencies, or do some state agencies have a say in the end?
So there are state-level permits. And that's why Dunleavy's new appointee to the Department of Environmental Control, the former Anglo-American supporter of Pebble Mine, this guy actually tweeted that it was like Christmas came early when Pebble entered the Army Corps permitting process. So, you know, there's the federal NEPA process, right? And we can see that that's moving along at least three times as fast as comparable projects have, even smaller projects have. And then there's the state where miners were able to block a ballot measure by outspending it 14-1, put a lot of money into the Dunleavy campaign, elect somebody who is not only supportive of mining, but has a whole big family full of folks who are supportive of mining, who appoints people to these the positions that make the decisions on state permitting that have said publicly that they're in support of this because they've worked on the Pebble Mine. Not dissimilar to Standing Rock or other projects people have faced, we've seen that the major development corporations have been able to grease the wheels and perform what's called regulatory capture, where the agencies that are supposed to be regulating an industry are indeed captured by that industry. And that is what's going on with the proposed Pebble Mine in Alaska. Mining companies, oil companies have always tried to play this game. They've just found the most receptive regulatory environment to do it in under the Trump administration, but they've always tried.
I think some people would argue that state capture has also occurred under the Trump administration, but that's another conversation. So the site of the proposed Pebble Mine has a history of seismic activity. Why is this important to consider?
So we talked about an open pit mine having a pit, like in the case of the proposed Pebble Mine, a pit 2 miles by 3 miles and over a mile deep into the Earth's crust. So they extract all the rock, and then they process it, and you end up with this huge lake next to it, which is much bigger. It could be like 9 miles by 3 miles, where all this wastewater with heavy minerals is. And that could be the arsenic that they use to extract the minerals. So we're talking about really toxic stuff. And so this big lake, which they call a tailings pond, of toxic material, right between the drainages of the most productive salmon spawning streams in the world. And well, how do they contain this lake? Well, yes, there is seepage and there is evaporation, but they contain it with a large dam. The dam could be hundreds of feet tall, and unfortunately, these tailings pond dams have a history of failing. So we've had over 50 tailings pond dam major failures in the last 10 years internationally. A lot of folks heard about the one in Brazil where almost 200 people were killed earlier this year. Colorado last year turned a river bright yellow. Interestingly enough, the same firm that the Pebble Partnership has proposed to the Army Corps of Engineers designed the one for the Mount Polley mine in British Columbia, which failed and created what many have called the largest mining disaster in Canadian history, where the toxic tailings from that tailings pond flowed into the Fraser River and did incredible damage to the habitat in that ecosystem. So already a tailings dam is a dangerous thing. What makes it a lot more complicated in the case of the Pebble Limited Partnership's proposed site is that there's a lot of fault lines there. There's the Lake Clark Fault, which is mapped to within a few miles of the mine. And then right when it gets to the mine site, there's a period where there's a little bit of academic debate, shall we say, about where the fault goes next. Now, the Pebble Limited Partnership says, it splits. It goes in two directions, one 18 miles to one side, way on the other side. Now, there's USGS data that contradicts this. There's a variety of data. There's some data that suggests it goes within 5 miles through the site. There's some data that suggests that the richness of the deposit was created by the fault, that those two plates rubbing against each other and the magma that welled up, that's what created the deposit, that they want to mine a fault line.
Huh.
They won't acknowledge that. And the interesting thing, and, as folks think about if they want to submit a public comment before May 30th to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, this is the last chance. May 30th, between now and May 30th, you can submit a comment to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. This is the last time anybody can be heard on this during the federal permitting process. Think about this, because even without the possibility of an earthquake, the tailings pond dam would have a 1 in 5 chance of failing within 100 years.
And this is because of structural factors?
As a structural thing, yep. And so the Army Corps of Engineers environmental impact statements, which they have rushed through, does not consider the possibility of a tailings pond dam failure at all. And it also does not consider the possibility that there could be an earthquake. This is an incredibly active seismic area. Less than 200 miles away in Anchorage in November, there was a 7.0 magnitude earthquake on a previously unknown fault line. Knocked the city out of power, broke the roads. It's a serious earthquake. there's a great website called groundtruthtrekking.org where a geologist named Hig Higman has been doing a lot of great research on the ground in Bristol Bay, collecting new data, has explained quite clearly that this is like playing with dynamite, putting a tailings pond dam there. Whether it's within 18 miles of a fault or within 5 miles of a fault or right on top of a fault, it dramatically increases that 1 in 5 chance that the tailings pond dam will break, just like the previous one that Knight Piskold, the firm that they have designing this one, did, and spill all this stuff. And the crazy thing is that this dam doesn't have to work for 20 years or 100 years. It has to work in perpetuity or forever, because there is actually no precedent for the kind of water reclamation that would have to be done to clean this water.
It would be the largest open pit gold mine in the world. So that's why there's no precedence, right?
Right. If you look at how many billion gallons of water, like we were talking before about some parallels, like Rosemont, they'll process 2 or 3 billion gallons of water a year. Pebble would have to process 7 billion gallons and 11 million during the reclamation phase, according to their own numbers. So we're not only saying that this is bigger than, we're saying this is several times bigger than anything that's ever been tried before. And with water, water that gives life to culture and salmon that we can't get back.
And all nestled on a fault line.
All nestled on a fault line, yeah.
Wow. So you mentioned the public comment period is going to last until May 30th, and this is the last time people will be able to have official input on this mine. Are there other ways that you'd like to see people stand up against this mine?
Well, you know, for me, when I think about the little boats that I spend a lot of time in Bristol Bay with elders who aren't with us anymore, I want people to hear the voices of Bobby Andrew and Terry Hefferly, elders who are in We Can't Eat Gold, that have passed away since, and who started this fight with the mining company and sort of passed it to the next generation to finish it. So I think that having their voices heard and having those voices to inform people's comments is really powerful.
Where can you find your documentary again?
It's at wecanteatgold.net or on Facebook if you search for We Can't Eat Gold. So if you just put We Can't Eat Gold in the internet, you'll get there. Getting informed about this process and writing an individualized public comment is perhaps the strongest step you can do from your own living room. And so there are links on We Can't Eat Gold's website right at the top to where you can submit your own personalized comment directly to the Army Corps of Engineers. Now, I know a lot of folks are busy, and writing a position paper on this might be a little challenging. So what I also want to say is that there's a lot of organizations out there that are collecting generic comments, where you can go to their website, like savebristolbay.org, and click Take Action. And they have a pre-written comment that you can just put your name on and file in 2 clicks, like an online petition. And that's something that can literally be accomplished in under a minute, when the permits will likely be issued, if Standing Rock is any guide. But then they will be challenged in court. And when they are challenged in court, these public comments will become a part of the court record. The fact that over 1 million people have commented in past public comment periods, but so far in this public comment period, only 5,000 people have filed a comment, I think highlights how important it is for folks who have an opinion on Pebble Mine to share it with the Army Corps of Engineers through even these generic comments that you can just click and send to your friends.
And these comments, they can be made by anyone. You don't have to be an Alaskan state resident.
Anybody in the world.
Anybody. That's good to know. Well, thanks so much for speaking with me, Josh.
Right on.
For KABU News, I'm Emily Gresham-Beamer.